Welcome to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop
and Daniel Ettinger.
It's You're been a back.
While. I'm back. It's been a couple episodes.
It has.
Did you miss me?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice of you to say so. Well, before we go any further, we're going to have a fun one here today. We're going to be up in the great state of Illinois, or some of you call it Illinois. I don't know who does that, but there are people out there that do it. So they do bring the noise.
Okay. I mean, they've got Chicago.
So check our website, I'll keep it humane.com. You'll want to stay tuned for our announcements of the Agency and Animal Control Officer Award of the Year. That'll be dropping in November. December. You'll be finding out. Wow, I can't talk today, which is not abnormal. Nope. You'll find out who is the crowned ACO of the Year and Animal Shelter or Animal Control Agency, however it was nominated. So we got a few nominations, which is good. Actually, more than I thought. They started rolling in, which was good. Really impressive. So I appreciate all the listeners for participating. I think it just took a few weeks for us telling them, hey, get your stuff in. And now it's in. So that's good.
That's awesome. Do you know now, about how many?
For officer, we're over 10. In agencies, I can't even recall. Quite a bit.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
So quite a bit. And then we'll distribute those and start chatting back and forth on how we want to do it. There's, you know, how are we going to be arbitrary on it? I do take donations, so if anybody wants to make sure that wins my Cash App account, no.
Don't listen to him.
Check us out. Most people don't. Check us out again on Instagram, The Animal Control Report. We're also on Facebook, The Animal Control Report. And that's kind of it. We do have the TikTok. I got to do more TikTok. I always say that when I bring it up, but it's true. So check out the Keep It Humane on TikTok. And then if you want to watch this podcast, you can see us on YouTube as well. Just type in the Animal Control Report podcast and boom, you'll see it. All right, Bishop, you ready to get started?
I'm ready to get started. Are you?
Yeah, I got a story for you.
Oh, good. Are you going to read? Think you can read?
No reading.
Oh.
No reading. this story today is brought to you by the local dog park in Southern California. No, I think you might like this story. So we as animal control officers, I think the longer you do the job, and we do have a veteran on, and not to age that person, but they can give some insight on their, you know, experience having done this job for a long time. It really lends you to different applications of life. And so I'm quietly like in the dog park, and I intentionally did not bring my dog's ball, which he loves so much because he gets a little crazy. There he is, just crashed out on the couch. anyway, I did not bring his ball because he just goes, you know, ball crazy. So we're in there playing, and I'm kind of just observing. And there was a couple, they had two dogs. One was an English bulldog, lazy as can be.
If you had a potato.
I was just about to say, bro, if you had a potato with legs, that was it. It was a straight up potato. And then they had like a 3-4 month old. It's hard to put a breed type on it because it's so small. It's most likely a dog that came over. We're so close to the border. It's most likely a street dog from Mexico, just based on what it looked like. It was almost like if you took a Basenji and mixed it with a Shiba Inu. I don't know what you'd call it, but it was just a very interesting breed.
Okay.
So they tried bringing it in, and this is no fault of the owner. I just think this is where like animal shelters can really help in these moments. It just happened to be in a situation where I was just, you know, chilling with my dog. But like, as we educate our next, you know, our next dog owners, these are areas where we should set them up for success and not failure. And again, we learn things like body language because we see it. We're exposed to it every single day, whether it's dealing with it in the field, whether we're in the shelter setting, whatever it may be. And I'm watching this dog and it's super insecure, right? So tail tucked, like nipping at all the dogs as it's trying to come in the dog park. And then the owner's reinforcing those behaviors, right? So they're like picking the dog up, petting it, blah, you know, those things that they should not be doing in that moment. And then they're like, this is just overwhelming. We're going to leave. And I was like, damn. I was like, this is such a loss for that dog, which could then have lifelong implications on that behavior around other dogs for the rest of its life. So you know, me, Mr. I can't keep myself out of other people's business. I walked over to them. So they were on the other side of the gate while they were leaving the other side of the fence. And I walked over to them and I just introduced myself. And I said, hey, would you be open to a little bit of feedback? I'm not a dog trainer. However, I'm very familiar with dog behavior, body language, and those things. And they were like, sure. I was like, okay.
Nice.
So, yeah, absolutely. I was like, so here's kind of what I saw. And I explained to them what I saw. And I did it in a way that wasn't passing judgment or anything like that. It was just like, hey, I want to set these people up for success. Right. So I asked them, I said, hey, would you feel comfortable to try this again? Because you could tell like they were apprehensive, but they wanted to do it. And I was like, would you just come in, hold your leash loosely, but just walk straight in. Don't just stop right away and let the dogs just, accumulate by the puppy where the puppy's going to, you know, be nipping and all that stuff. And she was like, yeah, I'll do that. And the boyfriend was outside of the fence and he was like, yeah, that sounds cool. Cause he had the potato could care less. She was like, whatever, I don't know, whatever you want to do, dad, I'll either go in or stay out. So, she walks in with the puppy and walks right in confident, leash loose, just starts walking in there and the puppy's doing good, like exhibiting good signs of body language, doing some play bows. If dogs got too close, a couple little nips, etc. But then after about 5 minutes of just her walking around the dog park doing that type of stuff, she just lets the dog off the leash. Dog did great.
Nice.
Dog did great. So those, like, it's hard in our job to not disattach always. And I tell people, like, work-life balance, which I completely agree with. I've been on vacation actually for over a week and I haven't checked my work phone or email once. So that's what I mean, work-life balance. But the job itself, the things, those little things, those intricacies where you can see it and maybe help somebody, because potentially we just adverted a dog having bad behavior problems for the rest of its life, if that was going to be the cycle where they come into the dog park and every time reward that negative behavior. So that was a win-win this morning.
Nice.
Yeah. So
that's impressive. I personally, because of there's so many people out there that don't pay attention to their dog behavior, I am not a fan of dog parks.
Fair.
I don't do the dog parks unless it's late. Like, I'll go when it's dark out and I'll take my dog when it's dark out. And I've taken and just had some glow sticks that my kids had and put them on his harness so that I knew where he was, which is really nice because I just work on some recall and stuff and just let him run. And then I walk away and see how long it takes him to figure out that I walked away and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Do you feed him the glow stick too? So when he poops, you can find it easy.
Of course.
Yeah. Because it's not toxic. it is toxic. So please do not feed your dog that. Okay.
Quentin, what are your thoughts on dog parks?
Well, let's properly introduce our guest. Because people are probably wondering, if you're watching on YouTube, who's this guy? Well, that's Quentin Johnson. He is a senior animal control officer in Aurora, Illinois, and also the president of the Illinois Animal Control Association. Quentin, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here with you guys. It's been a while.
We're excited to have you.
Yeah.
We're excited to have you. And I think it's important for our listeners to understand, if they haven't met you or if they maybe just don't know who you are, let them know kind of your background, how you got into the profession, how long you've been doing it, and where you're kind of at in your current role.
Well, I've been with the City of Aurora Department of Animal Control since January of 1995, so been a little while, 28 years and change.
Wow. Who's counting?
I started working in the kennel. At that point, I had been working customer service, retail management, stuff like that. My wife worked for the city, and we just had our first child. Went downtown, and I saw an opening for animal control. And at the time, I was driving 40, 50 miles one way every day to a job that paid me less than what they were offering to work in the kennel. It was a no-brainer. And so, you know, it started off working in the kennel, taking care of the animals. It was good work. Met a lot of nice people. Matched a lot of good people up with needy pets. Really worked well. And one day I showed up to work, and it was like the perfect storm for my career advancement, because there was one person who had thrown their back out playing soccer. He was an officer, so he was going to be sidelined for a couple months. Another officer had, his wife was expecting any day now, so out on parental leave. Another officer left to work in a different part of the city, and the other officer was on his way out to join the police force. So I showed up to work one day, and my boss said, "Quentin, would you like to be an officer?" I said, "Yeah, of course." And I got a two-week in-depth training riding along with the manager of animal control, who at that point had about 15, 16 years under his belt. So I was trained by my own, by the manager of the department. He gave me great tips and was really the leader in providing professional training. He was the first one in the area to get us involved in the NACA training from back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I got certified through the old program that went through NACA and the University of Missouri Columbia. And within a year, then I was promoted to the senior position. That involves a lot of, you know, public speaking, handling the more advanced cases and things like that. It is really, really a unique situation to be able to meet people in your community at all different levels, all socioeconomic levels. I've been in the poorest of houses, and I've been in the most expensive house in town. And to get to know people where they're at with their animals, regardless of what the situation is, it's just really an honor to get paid to do this kind of work. It really is. I mean, talk about hitting a gold mine for a career where I can bring my interest of animals, my interest in law enforcement, and just my cultural interest in people from throughout the world all in one place. It's wonderful. It really is.
And I know that I've been able to, throughout the years, I don't even know how we originally connected, Quentin. Was it LinkedIn?
Yes, it was. Yes, it
okay.
was.
Okay. Because, you know, I'm a couple hours north of you. But, you know, we've been able to bounce things off of each other over the years, and we've had some really good conversations, and I appreciate all that. Because, I mean, as you know, I don't have much of anybody up here. So
correct.
That's been really nice. But tell us what your thoughts are on dog parks.
Okay. I personally am not a big fan, because I see a lot of bad things happen at dog parks. A lot of dog attacks, a lot of abandonment, things of that nature that happens at dog parks. That's not to take away from the positive opportunities that maybe people who live in apartments or condos, townhomes, who don't have yards to go to, give them an opportunity to let their dog run free. But there has to be a certain level of caution and experience brought when you bring an animal to a dog park. Some of the best dog parks I've seen have separate parks for small dogs versus larger dogs. And they all have, the better dog parks have rules stating that, you know, you're responsible for your own animal's behavior when you go in there. That doesn't prevent everything from happening. But in my experience, some of the worst of the worst things have happened at dog parks. And, you know, there's a benefit. I completely get it. But in my opinion, if you are going to the dog park, then regardless of whether you have one or two dogs, you need to bring one or two people for each dog to make sure that you have people on hand in case things go sideways real quick. You can get your animal to come back to you. And I guess I would lead into the use of dog parks with getting some basic training in with your dog before you go to a dog park. Mm. Get your dog able to listen to your commands regardless of what other distractions are going on so that you can get that recall, so that you can get them to obey, to sit, to stay, regardless of what's going on. If you do that before you get to a dog park, that can lessen the risks involved with something going completely nuts. Now, I drive by dog parks every day just to see what's going on, and most of the time I see lots of happy dogs going around having a great old time. And that's good for them. I'm glad that works for them. But for me, for my dogs, I'd rather either take them on a walk around the block, or in my case, in the last two homes that we've owned, we've had a substantial yard. So we can go out, throw a ball in my yard. My dogs, even my golden retriever, could get tuckered out in his own yard, running around. And the other, I guess, issue with dog parks, making sure that your animals have been properly vaccinated. You know, that includes deworming.
Mm-hmm.
And more than just the rabies. You want your Bordetellas, canine influenza, depending upon the area that you live in, so that your dog is protected also internally from anything else it might get exposed to out there in that dog park. There will be other dogs out there that unfortunately have no vaccinations, not even the rabies virus. That's a shame. But it's becoming better and better these days. I see across the state, across the nation, low-cost clinics are opening up. So there's very little excuse for people not to get their animal vaccinated. Here in the state of Illinois, the county animal control agencies are actually mandated to have special rabies clinics on a regular basis to provide a viable, affordable opportunity for pet owners to get their animals vaccinated.
I actually saw Cook County's. It was impressive.
Uh-huh.
Just all that goes into, I mean, they gave me a tour of their kind of administrative offices, and it was extremely impressive to see how much went into the low-cost rabies vaccination clinics. I mean, it's a big to-do up there. The other thing that I guess we didn't really touch on about dog parks are people bringing in intact animals, right? So intact female in heat, or in estrus, if you will, or just an intact male dog that might have just a little more testosterone than, just a non-intact male dog that doesn't mark, doesn't have that behavior characteristic. So that's another thing to think about as we talk dog parks. But
yeah,
just changing gears a little bit over the, so 28 years with Aurora, how many has that been in the field?
Honestly, 28 years minus five. So 23 plus years in the field.
Okay. So you kennel for five and then.
Yeah. The rest of the field. And even as a senior officer, we only have three officers to cover a city. That's like 43 square miles and a population of about 200,000 people. You're a senior officer, but there's a lot of regular duties you have to perform just to make the things work.
Sure.
And there are times where, you know, with vacations and stuff, we may only have one officer on duty for that day or that week. It just depends on what happens. You know, if somebody gets injured, somebody gets sick, you know, especially back when we had COVID going on and stuff like that, you have to be really flexible. And I guess that's one of the things that I really enjoy. Okay, I am the senior officer. However, I still get to be out on the streets virtually every single day, meeting the people where they live in their own situations. So it gives you the benefit of knowing where these people are coming from, knowing the situations that they're living in, and being able to bring your enforcement to a level that's going to have a good outcome and impact, as opposed to just, you know, constantly writing tickets and things like that. We have been given the opportunity to kind of flow with the situation in determine what's actually going to be, number one, the best outcome, and number two, what are we going to get the most cooperation with the people who own the dogs that are the offenders.
With regards to being the senior officer and you oversee then everybody else, right?
Correct.
If you had to give some tips to a new supervisor, whether they are familiar with the position at all or somebody coming in from, you know, regular law enforcement who's now overseeing animal control, what would some of those tips be?
Well, first of all, you got to let your officers be themselves. Everybody has different mannerisms, techniques, ways of speaking, and identifying with the people in the area. So it's important that the people realize that this officer is not a robot. I'm not just here to spit out my memorized ordinances. You need to be able to work with your skill set. Some people's best skill sets are verbal. Some skill sets are written. You need to, number one, make sure they're doing the job, but also that they're making the job theirs, that they're identifying with their strong suits and bringing their strong suits into these enforcement and containment actions, as opposed to everybody has to be doing the same cookie cutter thing to achieve the same result. There are some people who just by their own nature are really affable people, and the people just love them, and you can walk up to them and just, you know, be open and honest with them, and it gets across right well. But it doesn't work to like crack the whip to tell everybody that you have to do this the same way, no matter who you are, whether it fits into your personality or your professionalism. Let that person be themselves as long as they're getting the job done and aren't causing issues for you with the public. That would be my first one. Number two, if you're coming into a supervisory position, especially if you're coming from outside, you need to spend some time to actually get to know what's going on in the organization first. What is the culture that's going on here? Learning the culture. Because, for instance, if you were to come from the typical law enforcement police office or county sheriff's department to work in animal control, while there are similarities, there are quite a number of differences. So as much as I would like to see in some cases animal control agencies being brought into the sheriff's department or the local police department for the recognition by the public, when you try to, teach or anything like that to your animal control officers, you got to know where they're at. I mean, especially when you go to smaller rural areas, those people have a different mindset. The community has a different mindset. So you need to be able to observe, absorb, and then come up with ways to achieve those results that fit and gel with community needs. Because we are a different species. Yes, we want to be recognized as code enforcement, but law enforcement also. But by the same token, we are a special subset. You know, if you want to talk about subsets within law enforcement, animal control, humane law enforcement is certainly one of them, just like special reactionary forces, SWAT teams, and things like that. We're a unique group of individuals, and a lot of us only have a GED, okay? Many places only require a GED to go to work for an animal control agency or for any type of government in general. That's all we require is a GED. So when you're working with people, you realize that these people may have only gone to high school. They care about what they're doing. You want to bring up their abilities and fine tune them and hone them. But each person is unique and different, and you need to work with them in such a way. Now, the bigger your organization, I guess the more opportunities you have for unique, diverse ways of looking at things. Depending on your community, if you live in a community that is predominantly, say, Hispanic or something like that, or Jamaican or things like that, learning what their cultural references for animals and interactions with animals within that culture is can go a long way in helping develop your officers out in the field so that they understand the cultural approach to enforcing these ordinances.
Instead, absolutely. I want to pause right there, Quentin, because what you're saying is extremely important when it comes to dealing with our community. Because if you take the same approach every single time, right, whether, like you said, whether it's the Jamaican culture, whether it's a Hispanic or an Asian culture, how animals are in those communities are going to differ, right?
Absolutely.
So it's really being able to recognize that. Unfortunately, that's not really taught.
No.
In training in the aspects of like certification, right? It can be taught in FTO and those things, or having people with experience like you being a senior officer. But maybe that's, you know, maybe Bishop, maybe that's something we try to bring on somebody to talk about the different cultures of just animal ownership and how it varies across the board. And what we deal with is communities that are gentrified, right? And you have people coming in and saying, why is that dog outside all day? It should be on the couch watching Ellen DeGeneres, if that's even still a TV show. But like, that's the thing, is like, people don't recognize that, you know, culturally that dog still has all the same things that your dog has. It just may not go on walks or be allowed on the couch.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll talk about cultures. I got a call out many years ago. Somebody said somebody was butchering a pig in the backyard.
Oh.
And so, you know, it came from the police department, 911. I zip over there. Cops already on the scene. I mean, the pig is already deceased, and I'm dealing with a middle-aged Cambodian man.
Okay.
And so, for his family, he had 15 children, him, his wife, and 15 children. It was financially more viable for him to go into Chicago, purchase a pig, slaughter the pig, and then he can feed his family for many more days than going to the local grocery store, which is, you know, for a family of 17, that's a lot of money. So, you know, I had to tell him, okay, you can't do this here anymore. You can't slaughter the animal here within the city limits because that's prohibited. Even all of our meat factories that are in the area are in unincorporated areas. So I had to tell him, you cannot do that within the city limits. Now, if he had a farm to go to or something like that, he can do that. He just couldn't perform the slaughtering operation inside the city limits. I can't take away his economic reality, but I can create a humane situation, because I can only imagine the sheer terror in some of the neighbors' ears listening to this poor pig being killed in the neighbors next door. And likewise, you know, I'm sure Ashley deals with hunting seasons up north too. We had somebody on a certain part of town who would go deer hunting in the fall. And when he would come back, he would hang his deer from the trees in the parkway, not just his own trees, but the trees that are in the parkway that were city property. So, you know, for people, yeah, especially in larger urban areas, the number of people who are hunters is way down, but you also have a lot of people who are very aware of humane ideas. They don't want to see a deer hanging up right next to the street as they're driving by on the way to pick up their Starbucks or anything like that. It took 3 or 4 years to get the guy to finally stop doing that and just completely do the field dressing, take it to his butcher and everything like that. But those are just examples of a little bit of cultural knowledge of, you know, who are you dealing with? What do they usually do? We're a big city. You cannot do those things in this big city. Here's your alternatives. So it's respecting where they're coming from, but also getting them to realize that, you know, they may have to change the manner in which they're doing this to fit into a humane community.
What bothers me the most, I gotta just get on my soapbox, Bishop, before you go, is that same person that's calling about the pig squealing is literally eating a pork chop at their freaking dining room table.
Mm-hmm. And probably has a dog barking.
So, speaking of dog barking, that's a good transition because I wanted to ask Quentin at some point. We can get into it a little bit later, how that new 15-minute law is working for him. But that happened last year, was it?
Yeah, that came into effect with the ordinance changes last year. And it's frustrating for the...
Wait. What is the ordinance first?
Well, what the ordinance states... because
good call, Bishop.
Here in Aurora, we have two different things. There is a general noise ordinance, which is enforced by the police department. That covers anything from, you know, loud parties or live bands in your yard and things of that nature, or cranking your stereo too loud in the car when you're out washing it, whatever. So that covers all noises, but then there's a separate ordinance within the city of Aurora, which covers barking. Now, the way the previous ordinance had been written, and it wasn't just for dogs, it was basically no person shall allow others to suffer from noises made by animals which they own. So it was wide open. All it had to do was offend somebody. There were no time limits set. There were no differences between daytime and nighttime. And there were no species definitions either. I have once dealt with a situation, neighbors being mad because there was a group that would bring the parrots, you know, macaws and everything to a person's yard. And he had a very elaborate setup. So you'd have 25 parrots, macaws, large birds back there. And they're back there. They've got sprinklers going on. And you've got these big birds cawing and making a lot of noise.
Were they macawing or just cawing?
Both of them. Both of them.
I couldn't resist that one.
And it's good.
oh, Daniel.
You missed me, huh?
But So I actually had to do an enforcement action against that property because of the noise created by the birds, because it specified animals. It was wide open. In most cases, prior to the new ordinance, all it took was somebody to say, you know what? That dog is barking, it's annoying me. So we would go out there, try to speak with the dog owner. We would try to get from the complainant, what is the issue? Are you a third shift worker that sleeps during the day, perhaps? You know, any way that we could get to make the dog owner sympathize with the complainant as to, you know, hey, this person sleeps during the day. He doesn't appreciate hearing your dog. And if push came to shove, I would end up writing a ticket and we would have to go in front of the hearing officer. The hearing officer would ask for some type of evidence, you know.
Okay.
Being the officers, we would find out about these complaints after the fact. So very rarely could we gain that evidence ourselves. Oh. And so it was always just the neighbors who really hated each other a lot that you would end up in a courtroom, have the hearing officer sit down, listen to everybody. People would bring in recordings with the advent of the cell phones and video cameras and different systems. You get videotape and you can identify the animal that's doing the barking. And a lot of times you would get a person placed on, say, okay, we'll give you 3 weeks of probation. If you can keep your dog quiet for the next 3 weeks, we'll come back here, revisit it, see if the person who's making the complaint is feels better about the situation. And if he does, then we'll wash it out and we'll come back if it happens again. But now with the new ordinance requires that no violation actually incurs during the daytime unless it goes on for more than 15 minutes. At night after 10 p.m. until about 7 a.m. the next morning, it's a 10-minute limit. So when people call in, and many people are not aware of the new ordinance, they just assume that we're going to spring into action. But this is now written into the ordinance that for the successful prosecution or enforcement of it, we're going to need to know, number one, who they are. Number two, they need to provide us with some parameters, the day, the time, how long it was, did you get an audio or video recording the situation? Then we move forward. Now, I still will go out and have a visit with somebody, but we want to get rid of the anonymous complaints from people, because it's never anonymous. There's something going on. And most of the time, it's actually one neighbor being mad at another neighbor because of, you know, maybe the neighbor told the city of the junk and trash violation, so they know how to get back at them because they love their dog so much, so I'm going to complain about them. We're moving away from a bunch of complaints about just, hey, the dog barks all the time, to people now realizing I need to write down when this is happening, how long it's happening for. If it lasts for longer than 15 minutes, yes, then we have a violation, then we move forward. It's a little frustrating for people. They don't feel like they should have to, you know, some people don't want to invest in having a camera system at their home so they can capture all these things. I get that. But by the same token, animals do make noises. And as long as the owner makes a reasonable opportunity to find out why their animal is making noises, because there's, we all know there's a lot of different reasons. There could be something going on. Somebody could be, you know, breaking into your yard and the animal's alerting to that. There could be a wild animal traipsing through your yard and the dog is alerting for that.
Construction workers outside.
Exactly. I have a friend whose dog now is just definitely afraid of construction noises because of the noise that was made when the neighbor had a new roof put in. So there's a lot of reasons why these animals make these noises. People need to understand that. I have about three cases right now where I have people who are just fed up, and we're almost to the hearing process right now. But what I found is by being able to contact these pet owners, and this is where you get into like registration, if I have the pet owner's information, I can give them a phone call, and I try to get a hold of the registered owner to find out if they actually have been getting the notices that have been left at the door. A lot of times, for instance, if there's teenagers involved and they come home before the parents do, and there's a notice on the door, it's about the dog barking, you know, there's a lot of teenagers that will make it disappear, won't show mom and dad, and then all of a sudden mom and dad might be getting a ticket or call for a hearing. The case I dealt with yesterday, the woman admitted that she had learned about a prior complaint. She admitted to me that the biggest issue she's having right now is with her teenagers who let the dogs out when they get home from school, and pretty much the dogs are just let outside while the teenagers make their snacks, do their homework, watch TV, play video games. And so there's not any supervision going on. So she has instructed her children to let the dogs out to relieve themselves and to bring them back inside until she gets home from work so that she can monitor what her animals are doing outside. So I try to work as much as I can with these people. Does that make the complainant feel any better? Not all the time, but they do have to understand that we're trying to do these things and accomplish these things without automatically issuing penalties, because there are reasons for things happening. And I like the kindler, gentler approach if it produces results. If you can get your pet owners to listen to what you have to say and it produces results, and it produces compliance, which is what all municipal or governmental agencies want in general, is compliance, then you've achieved that without necessarily taking their money in forms of a ticket or something like that.
Penalty assessment, yeah.
Exactly. And I've written, in one case, I actually wrote $47,000 worth of tickets to one individual once.
And $47,000.
Yeah. For barking?
No, it wasn't for barking. This is a different issue. Now we're talking about animal hoarding. But this was a generational, this was like the third generation of people living in the same house. And not only, you know, it was a cat situation, of course, sometimes involved dogs, but every 2 years you'd get called back to the same place. You can smell cat urine from the sidewalk. All the windows are covered with newspapers, so you can't look inside that. And after every 2 years, this individual would get a nonprofit group, usually a church, to come in, fix up their house. We would remove, wow, you know, 40, 50, 60 cats from the house. 2 years later, you'd be up to the same numbers again.
Wow.
So I was instructed by the law department to then issue a ticket for every single violation that was there in the situation, because after decades of dealing with this, they wanted something down on paper that showed what we had done in an attempt to achieve compliance. That later on, you know, that was just one aspect of the city's involvement. There were also the code violations for the house and the condition the house was in. But, you know,
did you mandate any mental health for this family?
Well, with this particular individual, this person had a lot of mental health problems that ran rampant throughout the family in general. They were your typical hoarder. And I know in general, they say most hoarders are women and highly educated women. In this case here, sure, this woman actually had a PhD in biology.
Not surprising.
Wow. Okay.
She had a PhD in biology. And we don't know, I mean, we know the history of the hoarding that went on with her parents, and moving forward out of there, how we knew that there was a tragic incident in the family's life. And from that point forward, everything went south. And that also devolved into other issues. But you're also talking about a woman who was in her 60s at that point, who was actively going into other communities with cat traps and bringing those trap cats into her home. When we were on top of her in terms of enforcing actions against her, she would go out into the country and rent out a garage and take cats and just leave them in carriers in the garage. And I found out about that after my colleagues in a neighboring county told me about what was going on, and they wanted a history of it. So there was legal action taken against her. They did prohibit her from owning any cats. The complication came with a brother that lived in the same house that she lived in. And he also had his own handicaps. He was not, he was developmentally disabled as well. And so they had people working on his behalf. They wanted to allow him to own one cat. And they also permitted us to make regular visits to make sure that, number one, the cat had the vaccinations it needed, and that also the place was being kept clean and no other animals were brought in. So it was frustrating for everybody involved, frustrating for the neighbors, especially one neighbor in particular who had lived through this for about 40 years, because she was still living in her childhood home. And from the time she was a kid, she still remembers smelling cat urine from this house. And this actually never really came to us an end until she passed away.
All right, Dan, I got to ask, what's the most amount of citations that you've had? Like, total amount?
Nothing comes to mind. Honestly, like, as I think back, we've had some restitution in cases, which was upwards of that price that Quentin mentioned, but I've never written a citation that high. I don't know. I
can actually beat Quentin's.
What?
In total, we did a summons and complaint for somebody that was in violation of dangerous animal ordinances.
Okay.
And in total, it ended up being originally $82,000.
Way to go.
Because she wasn't And then they reduced it, and it got reduced down to, I think, 23,000.
Mm-hmm.
But it was originally 80 something.
Yeah.
That is just absolutely ridiculous.
And like,
yeah,
I like to use them as bargaining tools a lot. Because depending on the situation, a person's financial situation, sure, they may never get around to that. But in many cases in the past, I've come to situations where, you know, one officer goes out, there's no response. Another officer goes out, there's no response. So for a while, they used me as the third responder. And if I go there, nobody answers the phone, nobody answers the door, but I've got their information. I would, you know, write a whole bunch of tickets and leave it right there on the front door. And I would get a phone call. I would get a phone call typically within 6 hours asking what was going on. And it's amazing that once you have that financial grip on the situation, all of a sudden we're going to pay attention to things. What's going on?
Right.
What do I do to make these go away? And most of the time, most of those tickets were nothing more than a conversation starter, because you need to make contact with somebody. And if you can get their attention as like, hey, here's the potential of what you're facing here, or you can talk to us and see what's going on and take responsibility for the actions of your pets.
Absolutely. I wanted to, just before we wrap up, we got a few minutes left, and I just wanted to get into some of the stuff that goes on in the state with the Illinois Animal Control Association. You can go to the website, illinoisanimalcontrolassociation.com, and check out some of the stuff that they got going on. But I was hoping, just as the president, you could give us some updates and things that you guys do on a, you know, maybe a regular or annual basis.
Well, what we're starting now, you mentioned Cook County earlier. Cook County has stepped up their game and their assistance to the Illinois Animal Control Association, because they're the largest county and the richest county in the state of Illinois. So we're going to have some virtual training here starting in another week or so. And we'll run every couple of weeks with three or four different trainings as we head into the fall and winter. But what we're going to do is, besides providing the virtual training on that particular day, they're going to create an archive for our membership, so that if you're not able to attend on that day, you can get into the archive so that your officers, your personnel can see what that training was all about on their own time. So we're trying to make it convenient. California, Illinois is a fairly lengthy state. It could take me, you know, a day's work to drive from up here near Chicago to the southernmost point of Illinois. And some people don't understand that. And the further south you get in our state, the fewer resources they have from their tax bases in general. So talking about some counties and agencies that may have just one individual, you can't always free those people up to go attend an in-person training. So this virtual training course and archive is one of the biggest things that we've been able to open up for the people in our state. And what we're hoping for in the future is to create other trainings that will be videotaped and put in the archive, so that, you know, all of a sudden you have a bat call. You haven't done a bat call yet in your career. Hey, let me go to the IACA archive through Cook County and find out what's the best way for me to handle this bat call in staying in accordance with state law. And we usually do two trainings a year. We used to do one in the spring, one in the fall, one in the north, one in the south, so that everybody got the opportunity. There's a real hunger for training in general in animal control. You guys know there's a lot of turnover in our field as well, so there's always new people coming in who need to be brought up to speed as fast as you can. So we usually do like a animal control 101 type deal to bring people up to speed on the bare minimums, especially in state law. But then these new virtual trainings that we're doing, we're going to start training on administrative responsibilities.
Okay.
And what, you know, as the administrator of your county program, what are you legally required to do? You know, as the administrator of your program, what is the best way for you to develop your team?
Nice.
And also, I've had a number of, I would say, county board members reach out to me because they are starting to realize the importance of the animal control programs. And they want to participate. They want to make sure that their people have all the tools necessary for them to do their job. And that is really exciting that we've reached the level of participation that your county board members actually want to know, what should these people be doing? What do I have to provide for my people to help them do their job well? And that to me is tremendously exciting because you can always preach to the choir, right? But when you can get out of the church of animal control, so to speak, and speak to the members of the public who actually get it and say, wow, you guys do some dangerous stuff, or wow, that's a lot of stuff that you need to do. You probably need some more resources. Maybe we need to hire a couple more people. Maybe we need to put more money in your budget. Maybe we should buy you a new truck. Whatever those things are, it's exciting to have those conversations with the people who actually hold the purse strings for animal control programs throughout the state of Illinois. And every day it's a new person who really wants to get to the bottom of what their people should be doing to making sure that they provide animal control, humane enforcement, and that there are options in their community. And to me, that's the most exciting thing that's going on now is the level of the county board, people realizing the importance of animal control, the things that we do. Some people don't even realize. I mean, I've gone out with SWAT teams, I don't know how many times in my career. You know, I wear body armor. People don't understand that animal control officers are 10 times more likely to deal with a convicted felon in their day-to-day job than the average patrol officer in the police department is. You know, you start throwing that information out to them, they kind of start to see how vulnerable these people are who might get a set of keys, a snare pole, a truck,
a map book,
a t-shirt and a hat, yeah. and go get them. Well, it's a lot more complicated than that. And sure. That's the exciting part of getting the public involved with your program, seeing what you actually do versus their perception. And, you know, you guys know all that, and that's the reason you have this podcast, the trainings that you do, is that, you know, here we are, we do this job, we're very proud of what we're doing. Listen to us, this is what we see, and this is how we can help. Or you tell us what you see and how you think we should be helping you, and where do we meet in the middle?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And hopefully more states can take on some of that and bring the attention to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I do have to put in a special honor or recognition for our mayor and our senior administrators who right now they are doing some phenomenal things for us. They're finding extra money to make sure that we can provide the things that we need to do for the animals in terms of, you know, make sure we had enough money to feed the animals. Everybody's got more animals in the shelter these days. So, you know, feeding budgets
so true.
Are out the window. That we provide veterinary care when needed. You know, they're very, very concerned about making sure that these animals do not suffer. And if there's something that, you know, can be fixed with a medication or a minor procedure, please get these animals off to the veterinarian so that we can get a veterinarian to look at this animal here. So it's really nice with Mayor Irvin, Jim Birchall, and we've got Derek Winston. Those three guys are bringing so much to bear on our agency. It is so refreshing. There's been so many improvements and things fixed in our building within the last year. It's just amazing to see that recommitment to animal control and the recognition of the importance of our program.
Definitely. Well, it's great stuff that you're doing up there, and it's really encouraging to hear just your commitment to the profession and how you've been able to be such an integral part in the state that you're in and just in general. So I think having you on the program and having some of those questions answered are really important. What tips, before we bounce out of here, what tips would you give just in general to somebody that may just be starting in the profession? Now, I know we talked about tips on somebody that may be starting as a new supervisor or something like that. But if you were going to give a tip to like a new officer that's like a couple years in, what would you say to them as far as how to, you know, make sure they finish this career healthy, happy, et cetera, 27 years later?
You know, early on, you guys were talking about work-life balance. It's extremely important. I mean, this particular year, I think I've only taken one vacation all year. And that was just 3 weeks ago. Because of staffing issues, sometimes things happen and you've got to do that. But do you also have to be able to step back when you leave the office and go home to take a few minutes to be with your family, to have your friendships, have your hobbies, have some other interests outside of the field of animal control to help stimulate your mind and keep you fresh and new. And, you know, keep your body active, go outside and take a walk, breathe some fresh air, you know, get some of the thoughts out of your mind and focus someplace else. I've seen so many young animal control professionals gone after 2, 3, 5 years who number one, they get burnt out because so many programs are so understaffed, and you know, we all are paid at a lower level than just about everybody else. Sure. And sad when you take a job like ours, but you could probably sometimes make more money going to work at McDonald's, that you know, you can see the need for bringing the bacon home, so to speak. But I've seen people take rash actions to save one animal or one situation, and I've seen those people get fired because of the rash actions without taking a moment to pause, because we cannot continue to be in this game if we're not here. You know, if we do something that gets us fired or puts us in a bad situation where they're asking for a resignation, we cannot continue to help any more animals, period. And I've just seen that. And I know for some people it's the passion, but for me it's being there day in, day out. You need to be prepared to do what you're allowed to do. And in some cases, if you're not allowed to do something, be prepared to speak with your supervisors and managers about it. Go up the chain of command the way you're supposed to. There are going to be times where you're going to get frustrated. But if you really want to be in this job the long run, if you want to see some changes come around, then, you know, you need to follow the protocol. Now, I'm not asking people to do illegal things, immoral or unethical things, but there are some times where sometimes a rash decision takes you out of the ball game and your career's done. And everybody that I know people who've been in this for 35 years, 47 years and up. And it's that consistency to show up every day, bring fresh eyes every day, and be willing to, you know, roll up your sleeves and get to work, as every day is a new day. That to me is just the more important part of making sure that you progress and have a career out of this. And then number three, you got to be hungry for knowledge. You got to be hungry for knowledge. You need to be, you know, back in the days, all we had was books. You know, sure. I read voraciously. I read the local laws, county laws, state laws, laws in different states. But then now we have such great opportunities online where you can just do your research real quick, get online and find out information about dog breeds, about wildlife, about
proper feed. All, yeah.
You know, it's all right there at your fingertips.
Yeah.
Be hungry for more information, and you never know everything. There's always another opportunity to learn something new. And if you have that mindset, you will, I mean, all kinds of great things are going to shower onto you. I mean, I never thought I was going to be the president of the Illinois Animal Control Association. I just started working in the kennel. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, people see you showing up. People see you participating in the conversations that are being had. And after a certain point, they start to listen to you. And then just be open. Be open to other ways of doing things. You know, I've learned so much from other colleagues in other parts of the country and other countries altogether about how they accomplish something. And it's like, wow, I've never thought about that before. I can make that work in my agency, you know. And that's why these podcasts, that's why these in-person trainings and virtual trainings are so important, because what works for one person, you may not have thought about. And I don't know how many deja vu situations I've had in my career where somebody just shared something with me and I'm like, wow, I wish I'd have thought of that 5 years ago.
That's fair.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time today and just sharing your experiences. I think it's really important to have somebody like you in the industry and advocate for others. So, you know, people in Illinois, please get involved. Those trainings are free. And, you know, having access to them year round is really important. So we want to thank you, Quentin, for taking the time to join us. And, you know, we're advocates for exactly what you're talking about. So it's important for us to have champions like you in a community. So yes. Thank you for doing that.
Well, I'm humbled and I really appreciate you inviting me here today.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
I'm glad you could make it.
Our pleasure. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Well, again, to our listeners, check out our website, keepithumane.com. Don't forget to check back here in a little bit to see who won our awards for the year, our ACO award and agency of the award. We're excited to announce that. And you got to find out what the trophy looks like as well. It might be nice. It might be normal. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But it's a trophy nonetheless. I was thinking about doing like a Stanley Cup type trophy where you'd have to pass it around, but I don't know. I don't know if we could get that consistent with, you know, just everybody across the country. So that'd be a little difficult to have it for a year and then pass it along. But you never know. We'll see what I come up with here in the next few weeks. So anyway, Bishop, you got anything else before we jump?
I don't.
Okay. Well, Quentin, again, thank you very much. We really appreciate you listening. To our listeners, please, if you haven't liked the podcast or shared the podcast or rated the podcast, please do, because that just helps us gather more listeners as well. So we need your support as we continue to grow. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And as we always like to say on the program, keep it
humane.
Maine.
Where were you, Dan?
I've been on vacation for a few weeks, man. It's been a while.